Today's daf in Masechet Yevamot, brought to you from Eretz HaKedesh, is daf Samach Hey. We're holding on the fourth line down. Yesterday, we discovered that there are many different halachas. Sometimes where we paskin that chazakah is in two times, sometimes where we paskin that chazakah is in three times. Some are pretty obvious because Shoramuad is a posuk in the Torah. We can't really redefine that. And clearly there are nafkaminas in the nature of chazakah for Maman, nature of Chazakah for Isser, nature of Chazakah to be able to be Motzi Maman, as opposed to Chazakah to be able to continue to maintain Maman, and so on. Okay, but this is the Yotzei from our Sugya, which was, of course, something of a tangential issue that had to do over here with the nature of Piria Verivia and marriage. So now getting back to the problems that we were talking about over here, which was some indications of sterility on the point either of the man or the woman, and the question of whether one is allowed to, first of all, is one allowed to marry a woman who has apparently a history of being unable to conceive, and whether, if he doesn't have children of his own, then of course, does she get a ketsuva? So we went through all of those halachas, but what we didn't go through was the interesting question about, does something change after the requisite time goes by? In other words, we say, okay, fine. She's allowed to go ahead and to get married again, because maybe the two of them just didn't get together, but she take a second husband. Each time that she does that, she's notelet ketubah. But then what happens if we do define at the end of three marriages, even though she wasn't supposed to, or maybe she married a guy who already had children, and we see that she really apparently is sterile, so then there's the question, maybe the original husbands can sue her to get their ketuvah back. They said, listen, we paid you the ketuvah because you claimed that you were not sterile. But now we see, after all of these, it's 30 years later, you've married three people, you haven't succeeded in having children, and therefore we want our money back. That's a question. So we'll get into that today and other possibilities of whether we rely on the end results to define what was there from before, or whether we don't have a right, just because there's now established a chazakah, we don't have a right to take that back into the past and now retroactively say that this proves 100% that you were previously in the same state you are now. So turn around on it. Niseit l'rishon v'lo hayu labanim. So she goes ahead, she marries husband one. She lives with him 10 years, doesn't have any children, get divorced. She marries a second husband, l'sheni v'lo hayu labanim. So then the halacha is, as we saw, that she should not marry a third time to someone who needs to have children. And the question is, she can marry, obviously, but only somebody who already has children from a previous marriage or from another wife. Now, what about if she does go ahead and she marries somebody who doesn't have children? She wasn't supposed to do that, but she does. So the halacha over there is that she gets divorced, and there is no chiyuv for a ketuvah. So in this case, we don't say that she could stay and keep trying it out. So now the question is, if she goes ahead, and the first husband say, now look, you got married, you spend time, this is a question whether she has to spend the 10 years, or whether she just doesn't have children, and so on, she now has established that apparently she doesn't have children because of her, not because of the various men, because we've actually tried out three different men on her. She still hasn't gotten pregnant. The question is, can she be sued by her previous husbands who had to pay her the ketuvah? Because at that point we said, look, you know, you don't have any proof that it's because of her. And now they can say, well, she went ahead and she got married again and she still didn't have children. So apparently it was her fault all along. We want our money back. So can she be sued by the first husbands who had to pay out her ketuvah? So the question is like this. I mean, the obvious thing that they are saying in court is, can they say to her, look, we now know that you are the problem. Odilma Matzit Amralahu, or maybe she could say to them, but what do you mean you now know that I'm the problem? I love this, you know. You wreck my life, taking up 30 years of my brief reproductive span, trying yourselves out and not getting anywhere. Obviously, by this time, you know, I'm not as young as I used to be, and I'm certainly no longer fertile the way I was, but you idiots killed my life. So now you want, enough, I should pay you. Are you crazy? So now, of course, after all of this playing around with you guys, hoping for the best, now you want me to say, well, you see, it's all your fault. I don't understand. On the contrary, it's now, only now, after all of this time, that I lost my fertility. So I'm not going to give you back my ketubah. Well, says the Gemara, obviously, if she already had collected the ketubah, so then it's mistavra that matzit amra lahu hashto dekachashi. Now, you're trying to be motzi momon. You can't be motzi momon unless you can prove it. So it's reasonable to say that even though maybe lechatchila, of course, she wouldn't have been entitled to a ketubah, but you want to sue her to get the ketubah back, you can't do that. And she can say, I have grown weak. Okay. Now the other question is, see, this is what happens. You see what happened to Trevor. This is what happens when you get weak. You miss a day. That's equivalent to the first husband. Then you miss another day. So it used to be that he was getting his son-in-law up. Now look what's going on over here. Hashtuhu dekachashoy. I've gotten weak only now. So tomorrow, Bezrat Hashem. All right. So what about this? How about if she goes, this is a crazy case. So she had gone ahead, she married the third guy, right? The third guy did not give her a ketubah. Then she goes ahead and she marries the fourth guy. And she ends up having kids with the fourth guy. So now she wants to sue the third guy. She says, you claimed, you see? I was telling you the whole time. It's you weakling males. See, here I finally got myself a real He-Man. Now I have children. So now I want my ketuvah. You claimed that I was sterile. So mao l'mitbei l'shlishi, can she sue the third guy for a ketuvah that he had refused to give her? Well, says the Gemara, I mean, wouldn't we tell her, look, you'll be a lot smarter if you keep your big mouth shut. Because if you're going to come into court and you're going to say that, well, you know what your husband's going to say to you. Oh, you ended up actually having children. Well, I never would have divorced you, who I love so much, if I had known that you could have had children, which means you're really my wife all along. Your marriage to this new guy, Mr. Four, that is a complete and total mistake. Oh, all of those sweet kids you have, a bunch of mamzerim. Now they're mine. They're basically your mamzerim and you're my wife. Great. So I think it would be very smart for you to just keep quiet, or you're going to be in big trouble. So, d'matzi amala, ana daita d'achi lo gerashtich, I would never have divorced my sweet, wonderful wife if I knew that, and therefore all your kids are mamzerim. Matkifler of papa, that's ridiculous. What do you mean? Keep your big trap shut. I mean, if this is true, then it's true. What does it have to do with whether she sues him or she doesn't sue him? If the guy could actually claim, I never would have divorced you if I'd known, so then why don't we say that? Why doesn't the court come, separate out, did they give a din that these kids are mamzerim, and now force her into basically recognizing she never got a get from the third guy because it was a mistake? I mean, it has nothing to do with whether she says anything. She wants to be quiet. We're going to be quiet. The court's going to be quiet. Anan mishatkina. I mean, if the reality is that this was a mistake, the nimtza get batelu b'nei mamzerim. I mean, either that's the reality or it's not the reality. If it is the reality, it's irrelevant whether she keeps her mouth shut. And if it's not the reality, so it's not a response that is meaningful. You can't say, well, what do you mean you can't sue for your ketuvah because putting that suit into court is going to make things worse for you? It won't make things worse for you. Obviously, we don't really believe this. Now, remember that this has to do with a big question that should be bothering us that we had before. And that was that wherever there is a divorce because of supposed infertility, we force the guy at the time of the get to accept upon himself that I'm giving this get with the understanding that I can never take this woman back again, right? That's what we said. Exactly because of this problem, because we don't want people to be giving divorces and then to be able to come back after the woman goes in and has children with somebody else and then say, well, I never would have divorced you. It's precisely what our problem was. And the truth is that was our limit of rebuta, but even the Rabbanan who argued and said, no, we don't make him do that, that was only because the Rabbanan held, as Tosfos goes through here explaining, reminding us of the sugya, is because the Rabbanan hold, he could never say that anyway. We don't need him to accept on himself that he can't take her back. Why can he never say that? Because we'd say to him, listen here, buddy, if you really cared, I mean, don't tell me, oh, if I had known that you could, if you really cared, you would have exhausted every possible avenue to make certain that there is no way for her to have children. Now, there are very clear-cut ways to determine whether a woman is an ilanit. But again, as Tosfos explains, there's two completely different sugyot over here. The question of whether she is an ilanit, I mean, yes, there, if she is an ilanit, there are ways for us to determine that. And the Gemara went through that. Remember in Nida, all kinds of simanim. But we're not talking about ilanit over here, are we? I mean, we're talking about there are no signs of ilanit. She seems to be completely functional reproductively. I mean, there's a million and one things that could be so subtle. You know, I mean, there could be allergies between her and her husband. There could be particular problems of timing. I mean, there could be all types of genetic difficulties in which there's some problems with this particular sperm and ovum. You can't say I would have exhausted any possibility if I don't have the tools. So, I mean, apparently what we're saying over here, therefore, says the Gemara, is that we don't have the right to conclude merely on the basis of what turns out. We don't have any basis to conclude what might have been. So the fact that she currently is clearly fertile, she has children, does not mean that we would have a right to say that she would have been fertile 2 weeks ago, because there may certainly be subtle changes in hormonal function that allowed her to have children that simply were not in place before or that were causing problems before. I mean, remember, hormonal balances are the most incredibly tiny amounts of chemicals that we're talking about over here. So because of that, it must be, says the Gemara, that the reason that we do not assert that in Beis Din is because we always have to say, Hashtahu devarieta. It's now that she got well, because we have no right to assert more than that. Now, in cases where, there's a lot, this is an extremely complex sugya, there's a lot of different shitas about what precisely the case is over here. The pashtus is that we're talking about where a divorce is planned. A divorce is about to take place, either because the Beis Din is insisting they get divorced because they haven't had children for 10 years, or basically the husband has sued for divorce. And now the question is that they each claim to know why they are infertile. So she is claiming that he does not ejaculate with force. So we said before, remember we had in Chagiga, that unless ejaculate is yorek echetz, it doesn't necessarily have to penetrate her yorek, because remember we had the story of ejaculate in a bathtub, where the woman could get pregnant from, but that old story with Shmuel. So over there we said, unless ejaculation takes place under force, which is called yorek chetz, so then we do not have an appropriate number of actual fertile and usable sperm. And because of that, she's saying, I'm telling you, this guy is a weakling, and I know that his ejaculate is just really not coming out with any kind of pressure. And he's saying, she's got all kinds of problems. He can't get anything into her. She's always dripping out semen. It says something's wrong with her. It's all her fault. Whatever the issues are. So these are elements that are between them. in which they're having subjective senses of what's going on. And the question is, do we, in the event that there is no reason for us to suspect that she is in a position of saying something to get divorced, because the divorce is already planned. So then the question is, who would be believed in these cases? Fine. So again, there's a lot of questions over here, because, I mean, why would we believe her if there's going to be an impact on the din of her ketubah? So that takes a lot of juggling. I mean, we can't believe someone who's saying something which is to their benefit, because it's going to now back up her contention that he should have to pay for the ketubah. Okay, so there's all type of explanations how this works out. There's literally over a dozen explanations. So I'll leave this up in the air, because the question of the reason for belief, as opposed to why we're not cheshesh for lies and so on, has a lot of different approaches, and it's not our main sugya. What is our main sugya is, again, sources of infertility. So Amar Abami, look, if we're talking about dvarim shebeino levina, these are things that have to do with intimacy. And over there, you're talking about very subtle sensations. I mean, there may be elements, dvarim shebeino levina includes the question of how much of an erection he has. She claims his erection is weak, he's not really penetrating properly. With all of these kind of things, a male may feel that he has a great erection, and she's telling him, no, I'm sorry, you ain't getting anywhere. And that because of that, we say that she is ne'emenet. Why is that? V'taymamai, because he, kaimelon b'yorekechetz, who lukim le'yorekechetz. A male's sensation of what's going on in his body is not the same as an objective sense of someone who is able to sense from the outside. So obviously a person can think that he has an erection and he doesn't really have a strong erection. Or he may think that he's ejaculating with force and he's not. Because of that, we will accept her opinion on what's happening between them. Now, there's also an issue where the husband is the one who says that there's a problem. And in this case, we said that if she's claiming that he's the one that's incapable of giving her active sperm, so over there we said he's got to pay the ketuvah. But what about if he says, look, you know, you guys don't know how to take sperm counts. You guys don't know what to do. I'm going to prove that I am perfectly fertile. How are you going to prove that? I'm going to take another woman. I'll impregnate her, okay? That's going to show you there ain't nothing wrong with me. So suppose he goes ahead and he says this. He wants to prove his virility. And he says, before you believe her and before you take the money for her ketuvah, give me an opportunity to prove myself. So do we in fact put off payment under these cases? Ezel intzivita, let me take another woman. And then we'll see whether I can have children or not. Omer Rabbi Ami, af bezo yotzivi yitein ketuvah. Even in this case, he has to give her a ketuvah at this point, because, look, what happens over here is that he's saying, I don't want to pay the ketuvah. And the way I'm going to avoid paying the ketuvah is by marrying another woman. So says Rav Ami, that's ridiculous. Because in any case where you would marry another wife, you're always mechuyev to give your first wife a ketuvah. So I don't care whether the reason is that you are really interested in proving your virility. That's your problem. It's not her problem. And therefore, the very fact of taking another wife is mechayev you to give a ketuvah. So all of this talk is just talk. Because I say, Shani Omer Kolano say Isha al Ishto, by definition, whatever your reason is, you need to take another wife. You, if she wants, you have to divorce her and you have to give her ketubah. Whereas, of course, we saw before that Rava says, a man is allowed to have as many wives as he wants, as long as he can support all of them. Now remember, we also Sorry, we also said before that he also should not take more women than he's able to service sexually in a normal way. Therefore, he shouldn't take more than four wives, assuming that his ona is supposed to be once a week, because we want her to be able to have relations with him at least once every menstrual cycle. Okay, but again, all of this is not our sugya here. So the other thing that we said that may be a question of understanding what's going on, where they could each claim some type of objective information. And we said before that if she has a miscarriage, that we start counting again from the miscarriage, because obviously there has been some reproductive success. She hasn't been able to bring to term. So we'll start over again. Now, suppose the husband says, the wife is saying, I want out. We haven't had any children. We'll see whether she can say that, by the way, or whether this is only a response to the Besdin. It's not so clear that under any circumstances the woman can claim, I want out because we don't have children. It depends on why she's justifying her claim that she needs children. We'll see this in a moment. But if he says, let's say the case is that the court wants him to get divorced. He says, now, we haven't been married for 10 years. Don't you remember that 6 years ago you had a miscarriage? And therefore, we're only in 6 years of the count. We've got another 4 years to go before the Besdin can force us to get divorced. And she says, no, I never had a miscarriage. So now the question is, according to the husband, they don't have to get divorced now. She's the one who's claiming they do have to get divorced now, and that he's therefore going to have to pay her ketuvah. So in this case, who is believed? Omer Rabbi Ami, I say, even in this case, also she's believed, referring to his first shot about Yorek Kechetz. Because Yorek Kechetz, I said, a female is more in touch with the sensations of intercourse. So she knows. But even here, we say that it's still true that she would know the extent at which it's miscarried and that we would believe her. Because the imita, the ipila, if she had miscarried, like he was claiming, then she would have been anxious to go along with that claim, even though it means that she would have to sit with him. Why is that? Because it's considered by a woman to be an extreme psychological and social blow to be viewed as infertile. So she doesn't want to be known as a woman who can't have children. So therefore, she would have grasped at the possibility that she had a miscarriage. If she's ready to say that, look, I mean, the honest truth is, I am basically barren. I can't have children. No woman says that about herself. And therefore, psychologically, we have reason to believe her. Another issue is, suppose she did have a miscarriage, and then she had a second miscarriage. So now again, we get into the issue about, is she huksika l'nefali? So what we're saying is, that now, if she was chazer v'ipila a third time, apparently we're going like Rishon Gamliel, that three times defines a chazaka, so then this means that she now has a different problem. We don't view her as being infertile literally, but as being incapable of carrying to term. So now she has a chazaka that she's not going to be able to have children with this husband. So we're back to where we were before. And in this case, yes, she can marry a second person, because again, there may be some type of genetic incompatibility, and that's causing the miscarriages, whatever. So she can marry somebody else, but they do have to get divorced now. Now suppose the husband said, no, there were only two miscarriages, not three, and therefore you don't have a chazaka, and she says three. Omar Rabbi Yitzchak ben Elazar, this happened to us in the Beis HaMedrash, that a couple came in arguing about this, and Uvda Havi Be Midrasha, and basically what the Rabbonim decided was, is that he me'emna, even there, she's believed, because the im'ita delo apla, nafsha ben nifli lo marzika. This is not something that she would lie about, and why should she put herself into a position of having been established as being incapable of carrying a child to term? Therefore, if she's saying this, we have every reason to believe that she is saying the truth. And this leads us to our Capitan. Ha'ish mitzuva al piryavirivya, avalo ha'isha. So surprisingly, when it comes to the inyan of reproduction, it's a chiyuv on the man and not on the woman, according to the Tanakhama. Rabbi Yochanan ben Broch omer, that's not true. Read the pasuk. Vayevarech otam Elohim, vayomer lahem Elohim, pru uravu. It's said in Lashon Rabbim, and it's said to two people, the man and the woman. And God says to them, pru uravu. So I don't understand. If he's talking to Adam and Chava, so wouldn't they both be chayev in the mitzvah? So where would we get the idea, according to the Tanakhama, that that's not the case? Mina ani mile. Omar, Rabbi Elah, Mishum Rabbi Elazar bar Rabbi Shimon. Well, actually, it's innate in that very pasuk. Because Omar Kra, remember that the continuation of Pru Uravu is Pru Uravu Umilu et ha'aret v'kivshua. You are supposed to fill the earth and somehow make it a place which is now terraformed. V'kivshua. So turn it into your conquest. So you've got a planet to conquer, so to speak. Now, this, of course, is Elon Musk's entire idea. He's convinced that this was actually said about Mars. It was not said about the Earth. But in any event, the question is this Kivshua addressed to women? Ish darko lichvosh. We recognize that psychologically, it is the derech of Kvisha, that it is a male's business. They're always jostling for kibush. And it's not women who go around being kovesh. Now, there's also a direct sexual reading of this, because ish darko lichbosh would mean sexually, since a male can rape, but a female cannot rape. That's the problem. So it's not the derech of an isha lichbosh in the context of pru revu. Because remember, again, you cannot force an erection on someone. And therefore, she cannot rape him. So because of that, that has everything to do with the entire structure of the perek that we've been talking about, b'chlal, from Abal Yavim Tov. So since that's true, it's built into the posik that the context of pru uravu is part of the context of being able to take charge. Wait a minute, says the Gemara, but the word v'kivshua is also lashon rabim. So what do you mean we're not talking to the woman? I mean, maybe that's a later social development of some kind. Maybe Chava was an Amazonian. I mean, why are we discussing Isha ein darka lichbosh? Doesn't it say in the pasuk v'kivshua, which is speaking to two people? Omer of Nachum bar Yitzchak, well, look at the way the word is written. There's no vav in the pasuk. And therefore, if you read it stam, it seems to be saying v'chavsha, meaning it's addressed to a man who is saying to be kovesh, and not to two people who are saying v'kivshuha, which would have in it also an object. Okay, so then that's the case. It doesn't mean that when it says that Hashem says to both of them the pru revu, obviously he's saying both of them, first of all, because remember the overall context here, without the pasuk in later on with the story of Noach, is being said as a bracha, vayevorech otam Elohim, and therefore it's not possible to have a pru revu without the involvement of both male and female, and so it's said to both of them. But in terms of the chiyuv of the activity of the Mishnah, of the mitzvah. The activity is defined by the kivshua. Somebody's got to go ahead and make this happen. That's an addition here in the pasuk to just the fact that you should be fruitful and multiply. Rabbi Yosef says there's another reason why it's a male. We take a look at the mitzvah as given to Yisrael. Where was the mitzvah given to Yisrael as opposed to humanity? Well, that is when Hashem says to Yaakov, Ani El Shaddai, pray Urvei. Oh-ho. So then if it's pray Urvei, that is specifically not to two. So over there it said specifically to Yaakov Avinu as a yochid. So that implies that the mitzvah is given to Yisrael only to Yaakov Avinu. Okay, now we have another mimer, Rabbi Loi B'Shem Rabbi Elazar, that seems to be unrelated, and it's like a complete non sequitur. So the Omer Rabbi Lo, Mishum Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Shimon, Kishem Shemitzvah al Adam Lomar Davar Hanishma, Kach Mitzvah al Adam Shalom Lomar Davar Sheino Nishma. So in the same way that there is a mitzvah on a person to tell someone tochacha, if that tochacha will be acceptable by the person who he's rebuking, so then there's a very important mitzvah. If you don't do something to stop another person from doing ra, so then it's as if you did the chet, and so on and so forth. But the same mitzvah, where there's reason to assume that there will be a response to your tochacha, it's a mitzvah not to say something that will not be accepted. So, kach mitzvah al adam shelo lomar davar she'eino nishma. Rabbi Abba says, what do you mean, a mitzvah? It's more than a mitzvah. It's an absolute chiyuv. It's not like, oh, it's a good thing not to say tochacha if somebody's not going to listen. It's an absolute chiyuv to never say something to someone because it's expressed as something which is do not do. And that is the pasuk, Al tochach leitz pen yisna'acha, hocheach lechacham ve'ye'avecha. So do not give tochacha to someone who is cynical because he's going to end up just hating you. Give your tochacha to a person with intelligence who is open to understanding what you're saying. He'll love you for it. Has anybody ever met any wise men? Baruch Hashem. Once in a while. All right, so this is a big problem, right? One problem over here, of course, is that we know we had the sugya in which in Erechin we learned that the mitzvah of tochacha is ad haka'ah. The guy is yelling at you. He's cursing you out. You're still giving him tochacha. He sure sounds like a leitz to me. And you keep giving him tochacha until he finally beats you up. That's the only time that you stop. What happened to al tochach leitz? I mean, it's like tremendous steers in the whole halacha. Not to mention the fact that this is all apparently a complete non sequitur. So at first, I want to point out to you why it's not a non sequitur. And one of the important things to point out is that words and sperm are interrelated. And this is because we have the same issue of do not waste your sperm, which is hotza'at zera levatala, is spoken about hotza'at dvarim levatala. Don't waste your words. Don't go around blabbering and just basically mental masturbation. That is usher as well. But that's just a gentle understanding of what's going on over here. Obviously, the reason that these two things are connected are because of the fact of the relationship, first of all, between genetics and mimetics, obviously. And the mode of reproduction in mimetics is words. But more than that, and remember that the word, actually, that we even use for genitals is the word, mila, which is actually the gematria of peh. This is a mouth. So the idea over here is there's clearly an interrelationship. And because of this, We need to understand that there is a very profound meaning to the interrelationship of the two sugyas of Rabbi Elohim Mishum, Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon. In both cases, you have nothing to do with the outcome, which is an amazing kind of mitzvah. We don't have a mitzvah to have children. You can't have a mitzvah to have children because it's not in your hands to have children. So that's obvious. HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't give us mitzvahs that we cannot do. Your mitzvah is to engage in a kind of relationship that can bring forth children. Now, let me ask you a question like this. Somebody has not been successful in marrying, right? Okay, whatever it is, psychological problems, he's ugly, nobody, whatever it is, right? But he has not been able to get married. So should he go basically to some whore somewhere and get her pregnant? Or better yet, let him go to a sperm bank and he'll say, well, I'll be Mekayim Piri of Arivia because ultimately we'll get some sperm to someone or another and that will be my Kiyum of the Mitzvah Piri of Arivia. I think that it's pretty clear to everyone that that's not the mitzvah of Piri of Arivia. In other words, allowing your sperm to be used, I mean, that's not Piri of Arivia. And in fact, even the idea of inserting your sperm is not Piri of Arivia. It's the context of the relationship that leads to having children as part of the norms of speaking to male and female about Prur Urvu, that's what reproduction is about. It's not just that there's such an incredible, I don't know whether you want to call it even a taboo against the idea of, you know, the 1984 modes of reproduction and so on, you know, which everything is just a laboratory and so on. Maybe it's not a taboo, but there's definitely a sense of abhorrence of creating a mere mechanical relationship to reproduction. I meant Brave New World. It's always great to have a Barnea there. Thank you. Yes, I did. We forgot 1984 was in a previous century in a different lifetime anyway. Can you imagine once that sounded like the infinite future? 1984. Okay. So it still sounds like that to me. It's so funny. Okay, so in the same way, I pointed out that this is Nogea, the Gemara that we had in Ta'anit, that always compares rainfall to reproduction, the fertility of the earth to reproduction, calls rainfall intercourse, revia, that's the name that we give for it. We view, and that's the interrelationship. Someone who wastes a sperm brings a marble to the world, and that's considered to be the chet of the Dora marble, things like that. So these senses of where the Veholi Davi Hitzmicha is investment. We just talked about farming before. Remember? What does farming get to you? It's investment in something that's not in your hands. That's how all of these sugyas interrelate. You're going to put yourself into something where your input is relatively minor and everything is happening by magic. I'm talking to somebody and I am trying to tell him that he should change the way that he lives as if what I'm saying is going to have some actual impact makes about as much sense as continuing to try to get a woman pregnant who hasn't gotten pregnant for the past 10 years. And it really is a profound modality of the way we relate to the world in ways, note how deeply this relates to Vikiv Shua, in ways that are out of our hands. There is no Vikiv Shua in the actual childbirth. And there is no Vikiv Shua in terms of Tochacha. You cannot enforce your vision of reality on another mind. So now the question is, what is necessary for the equivalent of marriage, so to speak, as the context for Piri of Arivia? What is the equivalent context for the mimetic Piri of Arivia, which we call Tochacha? That's the question. So what it is that Rabbi Eloi is saying is that it has to be within a context of a relationship which, unbelievably, has to do with love. So it's the ochach lechacham, v'yavecha, means that the tochacha, in the same way that love making for reproduction has to be in the context of love, or at least its possibility, in the context in which we will hope that love can develop out of this relationship. That's what tochacha is. It applies where love can grow out of the relationship, which is so striking. Now the question is, la halacha, how does this apply to the Gemara that talks about keep at it until he beats you up? So the way the Rav Shulchan Aruch understands the sugya is indeed that the mitzvah of tochacha that the Gemara is talking about in Erechet, which is to keep at it until he beats you up, is exactly the same as pru or vu in the context of a marriage. Keep trying until she finally beats you up, and then you know it's time for a divorce. It's essentially the same idea. The mitzvah is hocheach tocheach et amitecha. It has to be a friendship that this is based on. The fact that you're saying something that gets the guy so angry at you that he's cursing you out and screaming at you, that's still acceptable between friends. They can reach that level of anger and hatred. And that's the, remember what the Gemara talks about, a man and his child who are learning together? It's their nasim seinim zelas, and they hate each other in the first part of it because each one of them has a completely different approach. And that's et vahev besufa. At the end comes love. And that's exactly true over here. He may hate what you're saying, and you're telling him the truth, and he's so resentful, and he won't talk to you for a half a year or whatever. But the end result is that if there really is a fundamental relationship, and it's amitecha, it's going to make a difference until it gets physically violent, at which point the expression of the physical violence means get out of here, get off of me. So then it means it's a physical rejection of your words. That's basically what it is. Once there's a rejection of that level, it's not getting in. And therefore, it's a complete waste of words, and it ruins the relationship. Because then it becomes, why do you have to always be the one who has what to say, and so on and so forth? And the same way that it ruins a sexual relationship. Why is it always you who's trying to get us into bed, and so on? It's exactly the same type of psychologies and type of environment that is involved. And that's why these two sugyas come together. So this is the way the Rav Shulchan Aruch paskins. Others answer the stira by saying that there's a difference between a yochid who's giving tochacha to a yochid versus a case where you're talking to a rabbim. And over there you can cause damage because you're speaking to a lot of people, and then the energy and the power of decision in the end is when they walk out of shul and they start talking about what an ass the rabbi is. He actually expects us to stop walking out of Musaf and getting drunk. He's out of his mind. And so on. I mean, obviously over there, you can really cause damage by attempting to give tochacha under those circumstances. And there that actually causes people to be worse, not to be better. That's also a possibility of the difference. Other nafkaminas la halacha is where it's nogeya bezdin, as opposed to an individual. A bezdin does not have the right to take into consideration whether the person is happy with what they're doing, but that's because they have the ability to interfere physically. So they can actually force a person, they can throw him into jail if he refuses to reproduce. I mean, not that we would do that, I'm saying, but in a case where there's a chiyuv that somebody's ignoring, we'll throw him into jail, or we'll beat him up, we'll give him makas, or we could take him and put him into cherem, or whatever it is. But we do have the ability to be v'kiv shua. So since in the metaphorical or the hyperliteral v'kiv shua, there the Bezdin does have that power. So there is no ability to slough off any kind of chiyuvim at all. Because over there, if they don't give the tochacha, so then they're blamed for it. You have to take the blame. So overall, it's very necessary to see where you might be causing more problems. And furthermore, where the context does not allow for what's happening to be words of tochacha. They are therefore opposite of tochacha words. And you can't say, well, I have a mitzvah. What am I supposed to do? Those are not the words. Exactly. That's the point. Okay. So that's what Rabbi Abba is saying, is that it's more than those are not the words. It's that you're going to cause damage, and therefore it's a chovah. The Omar Rabbi Law, Mishum Rabbi Lozab Rabbi Shimon. Now here comes another interrelationship to these issues. which is, and this is much more subtle, the relationship between people is the context that is even further away from what is in your hands. You cannot manipulate relationships and expect that to work out. But the question is, the data that is reflected in the building of a relationship is always out of your hands. If you tell people the truth, you may be consigning yourself to the electric chair. I don't think they still use that, but whatever, right? So never tell people the truth. And this is like basically something that we just learned before, which is your own, you could have a lot of people, we just spoke about a lot of people that are your friends, but don't tell anybody anything, right? Okay. So that also was an introductory to this sugya. What about data? Are you mechuyev to supply people with accurate data, or does data depend on the way that it will be taken by the person who hears the data? Now, that is a question of what defines truth, actually, in an ultimate sense? Because is there such a thing as an objective fact that isn't part of the interrelationship of the fact to the universe? And that's what this next mamar, which, as you can see, relates very profoundly to exactly the two issues that we're bringing. You can bring things to the table or to the bedroom, but not necessarily define where they're going. And that's true about the ultimate bringing things to the table, which is facts. Therefore, says Rabbi Levi Shum, Rabbi Shimon, again, third mimer. Mutar lo la'adam leshanot bidvar hashalom. A person is allowed to change the facts. If the ultimate impact of those facts, by changing the facts, are what is necessary to achieve the real point of the interrelation of facts. That is relationships, which we call shalom. If your facts are going to damage that shalom, they're no longer factual in the sense of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's vision of emes. Because we know that Chotomo Shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu is emes, and nonetheless, he lied. How is that possible? So that's one of the sugyas that we're going to be talking about in a moment. But we could see clearly that not only can you just leave out part of the pictures, you can actually concoct a complete story that is totally untrue, which is amazing. Where do we see that? Because the brothers come to Yosef, and they give him this cock and bull story about his father called him in, and he told them, you know, that Avicha Tziva, your father said that we should give you, this was his last words to us, he said that we should tell you that please forgive your brothers, Sana, Pesha, Checha, V'chatatam, Kira Agim Alucha, I know what they did to you, please forgive them. We have no record of such an event happening. We have no basis for believing such an event happening. And it's basically a cock and bull story, and they made it up. So how could they do that? You see, it must be that it's mutar if it's essentially true. And Rabbi Nassan Omer, it's not only mutter to tell a lie, it's a mitzvah to tell a lie. So that since we find that HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells Shmuel to tell a lie, it's got to be a mitzvah. If Shmuel says to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, well, how am I supposed to go and make David the king? If Shaul hears about this, he's going to kill me. And what's God's answer? The most incredible answer. I am the Lord, and I tell you, he will not kill you. If he lifts his hands unto you, it shall be paralyzed, and he will be unable. No, he doesn't say anything like that. He says, that's a good point. Why don't we make up a story? Unbelievable. You tell him that you're going in order to bring a Zevach Mishpacha and so on and so forth. That's amazing. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, yeah, go ahead and take it, bring a parah, and you know, say I'm on my way to bring a Zevach for the family. Devei Rabbi Yishmael says, it's more than that. God himself said the lie. I mean, over your Mela, you know, maybe he says, well, if Shmuel's going to go to hell, it's not my problem. But he's not going to tell the lie himself. It's not true. HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself tells the lie. Because what we see is, Gadol HaShalom, Sh'af HaKadosh Baruch Hu Shina Bo, Demeikar Aktiv, Va'adoni Zaken. What Sarah said was, is that my husband is an alter kaker. And Lebesov Ktiv, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells Avram Avinu, yes, that when Sarah was laughing and she was saying, I'm so old, Anizakanti, he didn't say a word about, she said, you're old, right? So apparently that would have damaged the relationship. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu, whose chotam is emes, is not to be confused with the Western's vision of truth, which is honesty. Honesty is almost always a lie. Almost by definition. So for Holden Caulfield, honesty is truth. For the rest of the world, honesty is a lie. It's your own assertion about the nature of your importance to the world. Fine. So therefore, now here there's a big question, by the way, because the other examples that we had were outright lies. But do we find HaKadosh Baruch Hu saying an outright lie? He left out part of the story, maybe, and he didn't say the part about you being an alter kaker, that he didn't say. But what he did say was true. She did say, I'm old, but anizakanti. But the question is whether at that point, note the context in which he said, my husband is old. She said, acharei veloti hayta li edna. Because she had already gotten her period on that day, and now she saw, oh, man, some miracle is happening, but how's that going to help? My husband is so old. So if that's the way you learn the pasuk, then it means that in the end she was only complaining about her husband and not about herself, because she realized that her body was changing in front of her eyes, and so therefore it really would be an actual change. This is nogea l'halacha, whether it be somech, on this idea that Gabi HaKadosh Baruch Hu saying an outright lie. Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka said in the Mishnah, both male and female are chayev. Itmar Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi say, one of them said that the halacha is like Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka, that both are chayev. And the other one says that ain't halacha Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka. Now we don't know who said what, but let's try to figure out who said what. Tistayem, it was Rabbi Yochanan who said that the halacha is not like Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka. A woman is not chayevet, because Rabbi Abo was once sitting in the Beit HaMidrash, and he was quoting Rabbi Yochanan, and he said, Rabbi Yochanan said that the halacha is like Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka, and both sexes are chayev. And Rabbi Ami and Rabbi Asi were sitting there, turned their heads away in the other direction, as if to say, pah! That's not what he said. Now, for some reason, they didn't openly say that's not true. We're going to ask why. And there's another Ikari Amri, it was Rabbi Chiya bar Abba, who said in the name of Rabbi Yochanan, that the halacha is like Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka, that both sexes are chayav. And that was when Rabbi Ami and Rabbi Asi turned their head away. Says Rabbi Abba, excuse me, that part, this version doesn't make any sense. If it was Rabbi Abohu, who was the one who said that Rabbi Yochanan said it, then I understand why it was that Rabbi Ami and Rabbi Asi didn't want to say that's absolutely not true. All they did was turn their heads the other way so that people would understand it. But there's a good reason for that. Because remember, Rabbi Abo was the one that was so chashev, even in the house of Caesar. Remember, they used to come out, they used to sing. The goyim used to come out, the shvachot, and they would call him Marana Dama, and he's like the leader of his people. So they couldn't say something that would embarrass someone on the madriga of Rabbi Abbo, but they needed to make it clear that that's not true, that Rabbi Yochanan said it, so they just turned their heads away. So Mishum Kovet BeKesar Lo Omer Loi VeLo Midei. They weren't going to make a fool of him, the Beit HaKesar. But according to the Mani Omer, it was Rabbi Chiya bar Abba. Why didn't they just say, excuse me, sir, it's not true. Lo amar Rabbi Yochanan hachi. Okay, anyway, do we have any final clarity about what Rabbi Yochanan said? Yes. Tashma, the Amr Rebbe Bachanina, Amr Rebbe Abo, Amr Rebbe Asi, there was an actual Maisa that came to Rebbe Yochanan in the Beit HaKnesset of Caesarea. Now, this is even close enough to me right now that it could be Barnea's neighborhood, and we could even have breakfast together if he's ready to come over. Okay, so we'll leave it at that. And Rebbe Yochanan Paskin, Yotzi, V'yitein Kituva, that over there, he said, she has to get divorced, and Yitein Kituva, and what happened over there is that she asked for the divorce. She said, I want to have children from this guy. If it's none of her business, because she doesn't even have a mitzvah, so then why would he have to pay the ketuvah? I mean, she doesn't have a right to the ketuvah if she doesn't have a right to have children for a mitzvah. So apparently, you see that Rabbi Yochanan did paskin that she needed to get divorced because she is mechuyevet, which is a raya, that he paskins. Like Rabbi Yochanan ben Duri, and that the halacha is that indeed she is mechuyevet in Piri Verivya. Says the Gemara, not necessarily, because she might have come from another basic demand. Because there was a case like this of a woman who sued for divorce by Rabbi Ami. And she said to Rabbi Ami, I insist on a divorce with a ketuvah, because he's got a problem. So he said to get out of here, You have absolutely no suit here because you don't even have a mitzvah of Piri Verivya. So how can you come and demand that you get a ketuvah? You want to get divorced? Fine. But you certainly don't have a right to collect a ketuvah if it's your choice. So she said to him, really? And that's all that's important is the mitzvah. And how about me becoming an old lady and me sibadula? And when I get old, maita haviyala, what's going to be with this poor woman? My Habiladach Idita, look how you're treating an old lady. You're not old, you look like you're a young, but I'm gonna be old, and I'm never gonna have children. We're gonna take care of me. Who's gonna take care of me then, huh? So then he said, Rav Ami said, oh, if that's the case, and it's nothing to do with Puruvu, Kiha Vada Kafina, and a woman has a right to say, listen, I got married in order to have a future in my old age too. And if he can't provide it, I want out, and I want my ketuvah, which is part of the basis of my marriage. That is absolutely a valid taina. Has nothing to do with the mitzvah. And there was a case of a woman who came to Reb Nachman and insisted on a divorce because her husband couldn't do it. Amar la, lo mi faktat. Reb Nachman says, well, you don't have a mitzvah, so what's your problem? Amrale, what do you mean, what's my problem? You're telling me that this woman doesn't need a cane to walk on? This is my child, would be my cane. And who's going to be holding the shovel to dig my grave? Nobody's going to care about me. Oh, then he said, okay, kiyo vada kafina. That's absolutely a valid taina. And he responded to the suit. He gave her the ketuvah. Now, Yehuda and Chizkia, they were twins. Remember, these are the famous children of Reb Chiya. And they had twin sisters as well. Now, it was a very strange pregnancy and very rare, because what happened was that it was a multiple conception pregnancy. And so what happened was that there were two completely different ova. One ended up being a 7-month gestation and one a 9-month. So when it came time for delivery, there was a real mess up, because hormonally, one was ready to be delivered and the other one was not. And because of that, so echad nigmar tzurato lasof tisha, ve'echad nigmar tzurato letchilat shiv'a. And then what happened was, Yehudis was the wife of Rabbi Chiya. She was going through hell. And Havila Tzar Leida, she had a terribly complicated delivery. So what she did was, after, she didn't want to have any children again. This was too much for her. So she dressed herself up looking like someone else. She goes to her husband, Rabbi Chiya, and she asks him, Rabbi, itata mipakta piri verivya, do women have a chiya v'puravu? So he said, no. So then what did she do? She went to the witch doctor. He told her what to drink, and she drank a samadakarta. So she drank one of those magic cups to sterilize her. Oh, man, if we could get one of those, let me tell you, We'd be so rich. So Omar La and the Sofik Loy Milta, at the end, he found out about it when she wasn't getting pregnant. And he said to her, I would have so much wanted to have one more uterus full of kids. I mean, because, you know, you always bring me more than one. Would have been so nice. I can't believe I didn't catch on who you were, you know, goodness. So, ik of only aladet lichada kreisa achrita. The Omar Mar, Yehuda v'chizkia were twins. And the famous sisters, Pazi and Tavi, they were also twins. That was a whole child book series, you know, Pazi and Tavi. Wait a minute. Is it really true that women don't have a mitzvah, a period of a rivia, of Amr of Achabar, of Ketina, Amr of Yitzchak? There was a miser with a woman who was a chetzer shivcha of a chetzer baschorin, which you'll say, okay, so what's the problem? I understand if a male is a chetzi avid, chetzi bechor. So we said that Beis Hillel agreed that we have to force the Odin to free him, because what's he supposed to do? How's he supposed to have children? He can't marry a free woman, can't marry a shivcha. What's the problem with a shivcha? She's not mechuyevet. And yet, their bezdin, kofu et rabba, they forced the owner, and he had to make her a bat zchorin. So you see, it must be that she's mechuyevet. In period of Arivia, Omer of Nachum bar Yitzchak, that's not the reason. It's because Minag Efker Naguba, this woman was really in desperate states. She wasn't able to get married to anybody, couldn't have any relationship with men, so she basically allowed people to take advantage of her. It was better than nothing. So when the Bezdin saw that she was put into that kind of position, so because of that, that was Minag Efker Naguba. In order to avoid that, they forced the guy to give her a get. A get shichur, I should say, right? So he had to release her. So much for la miz. There you go. We don't allow things like that to happen. Okay, we're ready for our, I believe, big moment over here, if our capitan is available. There he is. Hadron alach abba al yevimto. And so we begin tomorrow, Bezrat Hashem, a discussion of the dinim of kuhuna and the appropriate wives for kuhuna.